This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
We're back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the MDN studios, the MGO Blog Roundtable. I think maybe Brian Cook has lodged a formal protest. I think this is maybe his, he's on the picket line, protesting the offense. He's not here.
So I actually think it's something else.
You think it's something else? Okay.
I think it, last week at the end of the show, the five of us, you, Ira, me, Ed, and Brian, we went out and had our picture taken with four of us wearing a Screaming Brian Cook t-shirt faces.
I don't think it's a scream.
Well, it
if
looks
you
like
look at it closely, he might be trying to kiss you.
No, I think it's a scream. And then there's in between us, right in the middle, is the actual Brian Cook head, an actual real Brian Cook head without a t-shirt with that. And so I looked at that and I thought, okay, here we got a black guy, an Asian guy, a Jewish guy, a regular old Anglo guy, and a Neanderthal. So it's like a veritable rainbow coalition that covers lots of stuff.
That's an amazing point.
And so,
Craig, this is your best work, man.
This is your best work. Of all the amazing things you said on the show, that might be the most.
Well, I just thought about it, and so I thought, here's the actual Screaming Brian Cook head walking in. And so I thought, what the heck? This should be Brian's banner ad, as opposed to the dumbass Pitbull thing that he had on there. So as opposed, he could, and so I shipped this off to a bunch of people, and they said, you know, Craig, A, you're even older than you look even older than you say you are. And B, you guys look like a boy band gone to seed hanging out in Skid Row with Tom Waits for the last few weeks. And so Brian apparently got the same vibe and did not put this as his banner, and instead he has a sort of generic picture of Jim Harbaugh on there.
It's been suggested to make this the Roundtable t-shirt.
I gotta say, your best work, Craig. I'm amazingly impressed. You managed to make a black man, white man, Chinese man, commentary. You managed to make it sound culturally sensitive.
It was culturally sensitive and appropriate.
That, my friend, is outstanding work. Kudos to Craig Ross. That's why you're such a great author.
That's why I sell a book or two every year.
I mean, the guy can't pat himself on the back. I don't know what it is. Brian Cook, how you doing, man?
Hello, I had to adopt some orphans.
You did?
No, not literally, but that was my excuse for being a little late.
I got you. I thought you were protesting.
I thought it was not Thursday. That's what really happened.
Of course, we have Ed Fang from the Power Rank. How are you this morning?
I'm great, Sam. I'm even better now after talking to Craig Ross.
Yeah, I know.
Past
man.
5 minutes, it brings joy to my heart.
Yeah, I'm glad that he's able to bring a little levity to the show, because I feel like the moment we start talking about the game that somehow it's going to disintegrate into headbanging.
What?
It's not.
I mean, they went out against Iowa and covered. We have nothing to talk about.
I'm very much in like it is what it is mode. So.
Okay. Yeah. It's a chill mode to be in. So Michigan wins. They beat Iowa 10-3. It's a contest where they harass Nate Stanley uh, in in ways in which he hasn't been harassed since last year's Penn State game. That's what it was, to me, reminiscent of. I mean, he was terrible in that game. He was worse against Michigan.
Yeah, part of it was the fact that he had linebackers screaming at him on, I don't know, half of the snaps that
unblocked.
He tried to drop back. I mean, and there were a couple of plays where, you know, McGrone is coming from linebacker depth. Like, on the snap, he's 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and he's still in on Stanley before he can even set up in the pocket. And that reminds me of Devin Bush. That's the kind of thing that Bush was able to do, and McGrone has that same ability.
Mm-hmm. I thought the defensive line was dominant in this game. I thought, I mean, we could talk about Kwity Paye, and I'm really complimentary of how quickly he bounced back from Wisconsin, where he struggled that day. He has been, you expect him to be lights out against Rutgers. And he carries that over to, you know, another really strong performance against Iowa. Man, but Carlo Kemp had himself a day.
Did he?
I thought he did.
I haven't added up the numbers yet. I mean, he played pretty well. Like
I thought it was his best game as a Michigan player.
It's possible. I haven't actually done the adding.
I know that Pro Football Focus graded out the entire defensive line. Hutchinson graded almost 80, who was the highest, but
only 80?
Yeah, Dwumfor 76.
80's pretty good for that.
But the average is 75.
No, average is 64.
And the average
score
is 64?
64. So from them, and this was a good game for the entire defensive line. Everyone scored out pretty well.
Yeah, to put those grades in focus, like Aaron Donald's a 90.
So their grading, like my grading, is
different.
It's dependent on who you play.
Yeah.
So last year, Mike Dana, they were like, ooh, this guy's an All-American. Clearly not an All-American. Clearly a pretty decent player, but it does matter who you play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, when Seth went over the Iowa game, he was like, this interior line is pretty questionable. So that does have to be taken in context.
Sure.
But what's not questionable is Tristan Wirfs and Alaric Jackson. And for Paye and Hutchinson to do significant work against those two guys is really encouraging.
Oh, dude, I think Jackson was banged up, though, right?
Well, pay attention. When you go back and add it up, Carlo Kemp, dude, he had himself a day.
I mean, to me, Paye and Hutchinson were, and Dana after Paye had to go out, were the guys, like, really under the spotlight because they had to go up against two potential first-round tackles. And I don't know how healthy Jackson was. He looked fine. I mean, it didn't look like he was limping or anything.
Yeah, they held him out long enough. He had plenty of time to rest. But the idea all along, I think, was bring him back for the Michigan game.
Yeah.
So. And the truth is, if they called actual holding, those guys would have had about five or six each. They did call one that was, I thought, a little sketchy.
Yeah, the one that Kemp actually drew was not a hold.
Not a hold.
And then they're looking at this other stuff, and I'm like,
But
the Dana one at the end was particularly egregious.
Yeah.
Because Stanley ran right by the two of them.
Joel Klatt saw that one. And so I felt like, you know, it's probably fair to say the interior of the Iowa offensive line is only an average group, say, but their tackles are very good and have been talked about being NFL guys. And they struggled, too, in this game. And I also agree with you, Sam. I thought Kemp probably had his best game in a Michigan uniform. It's gratifying because he's a very smart guy and nice guy. It's great to see. I have a question. I mean, is it possible, because this will be a potential sore spot next year, is it possible that Carlo will have another year of eligibility? He played, I think, one game last year, maybe only a few plays or
As a freshman, there was that game against Rutgers where a bunch of guys played, and people were like, no, it's fine. They'll be able to redshirt, and we'll see if that is actually accurate.
Well, you know, when I talked to him in spring ball, he
was talking about this like his last year.
He said, well, we don't – if I remember his comment correctly, he said, well, I don't know if it's my last year. I think he said something along those lines.
It would be especially silly – now that the redshirt rule has changed, if the NCAA chooses this one thing to be sticklers about.
Right.
Because they're like, transfer wherever you want. We don't care. We're sick of this crap.
Yeah.
And now, like, I'd guess that they have a pretty good shot at getting that year back. But, I mean, the thing on defense that I liked the best was not necessarily any one individual performance, but how Michigan seemed to have a plan for crossing routes.
Yes.
Yeah, they played a lot more zone again.
I mean, they've been much more zone all year.
Yeah.
So, but this was a situation where, you know, I think it was Iowa's first drive. Stanley ends up throwing it away because Brad Hawkins pops up under a crossing route that he sees on the snap looks open because, you know, you've got a guy with outside leverage. He's trailing the guy. So it's like, all right, as soon as he clears the ump, I'm going to throw it to him. And then Hawkins is there. And then Glasgow kind of gets into his feet and he just throws it into the sideline.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of times, you know, like Hudson missed a tackle. I felt Ambry Thomas was in a deep zone with no vertical threat. There were a couple times I thought that Michigan had guys who weren't executing the plan, but I'll take that over this is all man coverage all the time.
Yeah, the play you're talking about, it was, I mean, you talk about a guy who was moved around positionally and Brad Hawkins, and evidence that he has really grasped his role. He has a running back on that play. And a running back has a check release, and he gets caught in the wash. He's not able to release. And when Brad Hawkins sees the back isn't coming out, boom, he immediately jumps that crosser. And I was like, man, this dude is on point. But all day long, it was interesting to me going back to watch the tape when Joel Klatt, they highlighted the one where Glasgow got, you know, he got, they ran him off a couple of picks.
That's
in the middle.
That's the one I thought Ambry could have stepped up on.
Okay, so they highlight that here it is, Michigan again having problems with crossing routes. But if you look throughout the day, how many times they defended it really well with different ways. Go back and look at the interception that LeVert Hill had. It was very interesting to me because I was so caught up in the interception and, hey, you know, Vert played great defense, but look at what's going on in the middle of the field. If you watch what's going on in the middle of the field, because originally I thought, and I asked Al to look at it, and he did. I said, man, you see what they're doing? You know, they bring a blitz and they drop Aiden Hutchinson back. Yeah. He said, well, Aiden Hutchinson has the back on that play. So Aiden Hutchinson is covering your back. You got a guy that is a rat player in the middle that covers the crosser during the initial phase of the cross. But then, and this was the brilliant part, as he crosses the center's face, you got Daxton Hill on a beeline to head the receiver off as he clears the formation. And so now he's covered to the field side, and he has a backside safety rotating to the middle of the field. So here you have them covering the crosser at every stage. You got the back accounted for on a release with a defensive lineman. And you got safety coverage still on the back end of the field. I mean, they are doing so much different now to contend with those crossers, multiple different plans. The times where they had the linebackers, you know, matching the receiver. You talk about zone. Normally, when you think zone, and I had someone ask about this on the Michigan Insider, you know, we want to see the linebackers and get into their drops better. It's like, well, they weren't on this particular play. They're matching, as when the crosser crosses their face, they run with them. It's kind of like a man concept within zone. They aren't supposed to drop straight back on this.
And I'm hoping this will help some with a problem we've had in the past, which is quarterbacks breaking contain. Because when you're running man all the time, those plays can go. And this could be a problem with Lewerke and Justin Fields in particular.
One good thing about Payne and Hutchinson as rushers is that they're not the edge rushers who are going to get irresponsible and get pushed around at like 12 yards. So we had Winovich occasionally did that, especially early in his career. Gary was pretty susceptible to just going edge rush and forgetting everything else. You know, those guys go speed to power a lot, and they have a tendency, like when they feel that they've lost their edge rush, they're not cocky about it, they stop it. So one of the things about all the sacks that Stanley took is a lot of them were sort of like team sacks, mm-hmm. where just everybody is pushing the pocket closed. You know, there's one or two reads that get covered, and then Stanley's timer goes off and he tries to move around and there's literally nowhere to go. I think one of Pay's sacks was like that. Maybe it was Dana's sack, where he's trying to move and they're everywhere you go there's a defensive lineman.
Dude, so I guess for me, that maybe what was most revelatory in your point about covering crossers, we get caught up in this idea. that is all man coverage all the time. They certainly shattered that. And while there are going to be those times where, you know, it's 3rd and 22 and there's, you know, there's some man cover, 3rd and 15, and, you know, man coverage gets beat, there will be those times. But, you know, that comes with Don Brown, where you're gonna have those instances where it seems gratuitous, but he's gonna have more W's than L's when it comes to his aggressiveness, and you at least see him showing some, you know, adaptable when it comes to dealing with those crossing routes, coming up with ways in which to defend it when teams kind of, you know, cut him up the year before.
Well, I mean, they've been, I think, a majority too high team all year. So the idea that Michigan is just running the same stuff they did last year is not at all accurate. Yeah, you know, it took a little bit for Michigan to, I think, settle into it, and they're still settling into it. Like I mentioned, the Hudson missed tackle, and then McGrone was trying to like jam one up, but he just waited too long, and Miss Smith-Marset went around him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to be more aggressive with that when that's his task. But
so do you think that's part of the reason? I feel like LaVert Hill has been targeted more this year than perhaps all of last season. I don't know if that's because of his play. I thought he had a pretty good game. You know, like he got beat on one play, but then was definitely not beat when he got that pick.
And that big play, wasn't there? Could there have been safety?
The big play. Which one is that?
There was one on 3rd and 22.
3rd and 22 play.
Yeah, they threw it over.
And
the hill,
they threw
right?
it over. Mm-hmm. It was a great throw. It was a great catch. But I wonder if LaVert thought he had safety help on that one.
I went back and forth on this, and I eventually decided he probably didn't.
Okay.
And he.
It was a good play by Iowa.
Because the guy who's moving to the out needs to be covered, obviously, and so Hill's got to go with him, and then Metellus doesn't have the depth at the snap to cover over the top. You'll notice that's the only time Michigan did that. As soon as that happened, the various other third and longs, there were two super deep safeties. So, I think Hill just kind of got beat on that one.
And the other big, quote, 30-yard pass play they had was a fluke. When the ball,
the one Glasgow was trying to
check
the wide receiver. Yeah, I think
Glasgow or somebody tipped the ball and it
Hudson.
Went, Hudson tipped the ball and it went right into the
right into
the track of the receiver.
Yeah.
So
yeah, dominant performance.
There was a window there, but if Stanley didn't throw it as much on a line, but that's what he did.
All right, so now that we've talked about all that, guess what we're going to talk about on the other side?
Probably special teams.
Teams. This was like the first sort of really disappointing special teams game for me.
I guess we might as well just talk about the offense.
Right? Talk about offense on the other side. So we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the Emden Studios with the MGo Blog Roundtable, going back over Michigan's 10-3 victory over Iowa. The first segment was dedicated to the dominant effort by the defense, and it needed to be dominant on this day because anything short of dominance and, you know, Michigan, there's a good chance they don't win this game because yep. the offense after the touchdown really sputtered.
Sputtered before the touchdown, right?
Think about this. We got 4 turnovers. You got 8 sacks. 13 tackles for loss, a grounding penalty, and a bunch of penalties against Iowa, mostly legitimately called, and we score 10 points.
Yeah.
That's
should have been 13.
Yeah, okay.
The chip shot.
Well, special teams weren't very good either.
They got
game.
3 of them from the first Iowa turnover. So
right.
Didn't really generate that. Yeah, they had 2 successful drives, a touchdown, and then the missed 33-yard field goal in the second half. Had the weird thing at the end of the first half, which I'm just going to put in the I don't want to judge this bin. And then the other 10 drives were failed. They got 1 first down at most on any of them. They turned the ball over a couple times. They, they just couldn't sustain anything. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons that Michigan struggled in this game, but you got to go back to Shea Patterson as the number one reason. Like, I think he graded at like 56%. In my grading, which is not good. He had a lot of issues trying to find open receivers and throwing rhythm. And that's been kind of the pattern for most of his career, where you put him up against his own team and he's trying to read his zone across the middle and it just doesn't work. So you know, the number one example of that is the sack that he took when Epinesa got him. He had time to get that ball out, and Iowa's safety made a big mistake by jumping up on a crossing route. So you've got Donovan Peoples-Jones on a post. There's a cornerback with outside leverage, and there's no safety help. And, I mean, I don't know how you don't throw that ball with that much time.
You didn't see that on the replay, right? I mean, that was from being at the game and seeing what.
I mean, it's on
the
replay. If you'd like to look at the replay, I posted it on the site yesterday.
Okay, so it was in the broadcast. Okay,
In that situation, you have so much of the field to throw Peoples-Jones open in that. I mean, you got to do it. It was a similar situation to what Nico Collins had on his 51-yard catch, where he's got a guy with outside leverage. There's no safety, and you got to go after it. So it's tough because. You know, the solution to our quarterback situation, I don't know if there is one unless.
Well, here's where I keep coming back because, you know, we went over the game at you know, this was maybe the most that I've watched, I think, three times. I know Al watched it more. Mike watched it three times. And you do come away with he was responsible for a number of failed plays. We had, in this contest, we had 10. The thing is, though, that I keep coming back to is we had 37 failed plays total that we charted. And so he accounted for 10 of them. And so people respond to the close statement from Jim differently. I respond to it a couple of different ways. Number one, I don't think the candor that he has in practice is ever gonna really come to the public except for a rare occasion like after Wisconsin. Yeah. Then you get close to what you get behind closed doors. But other than that, you aren't gonna get, you know, raw dog Jim Harbaugh. At the same time, when he says it's close, what does he mean? I think he's seeing things in practice that he isn't seeing in the games.
We can hope.
And then in games, I think what he's seeing is the classic cliche. Coaches say 10-man football. And guys, I'm telling you, go back, you watch this tape, and time again, sometimes it's Shea, to your point, that he's the 11th guy, but a lot of times that 11th guy is another guy, and it's a different guy. It's not always the same 11th guy. So is that close if it's 10-man football, or is it far away if it's 10-man football and that 11th guy is a different guy? Seemingly all the time.
I mean, are you saying it's the execution?
I've seen 10-man football before. Two years ago against Penn State, you know, Michigan's open and drive. They go three and out, but on every single one of those plays, they have a run set up for a first down if one more guy gets a block. I don't feel like this is the same thing. I feel like Michigan is limited in the amount of stuff they can do. I feel like Michigan ran out of like things that they could do that would fool Iowa about halfway through this game, and it feels more like early Rich Rod, where he'd come out and he'd have a different package and it would be successful for a while, and then as soon as the opposition adapted, they didn't have anything to fall back on. They didn't have the depth of to their offense that they needed because you just can't run enough stuff.
I do buy that the streamlining is a part of trying to find some efficiency, but you know what we wondered is did they broaden it too much? Did they add too much to the plate? The opponent has something to do with it, of course.
Yeah,
of course. Right. It demands, and this we talked about this last week. You know, the opponent demanded some layers of complexity compared to Rutgers, but how much can you add? Because you got to find what they can do. At the end of the day, you got to find what they can do.
Well, and it struck me that, you know, they get down to the 7-yard line on their touchdown drive, and they bring out something new. They bring out this jet sweep where Peoples-Jones converts into kind of an arc lead block, and Iowa
Patterson also goes wide on that.
Right, play. And Iowa spent guys on that action, mm-hmm. And as soon as Iowa starts spending guys in that action, man, that run game feels different. You know, when Milton came against Rutgers, man, that run game feels different because Rutgers has to respect him as a runner. And the instances in this game where Michigan had the arc package and didn't even have to have Patterson keep, but just legitimately threatened the fact that the quarterback was going to keep the ball. You know, you get that touchdown, you actually get an arc read, Hassan Haskins, his chunk run at the end of the first half, similar situation. And then at the end, I mean, you know, we mentioned this kind of off air, but like they have a 4-minute drill that succeeds if Tariq Black gets a block on third down. And, you know,
yeah, that made Al go nuts. Because I was telling you guys, by the time I got to that point in film, I'm mailing it in.
You checked out.
I did check out. And Al Borges goes freaking nuts about this play. So what are you talking about? He said, man, if number 7 gets this block.
Yeah, you get first down.
This can't even address him by name.
This gets
that's what coaches,
big.
Coach
this talk. Gets big yards. Yeah. Because, and that's one of the things that I go back to, because what you're pointing out, you said, what, how many drives where they got one first down? Look, the notion of this offense being methodical right now with the inconsistency they have is kind of far-fetched. So they need more explosives. They need more explosive plays. Right. Are they leaving explosive plays on the field? I think the answer is yes. We focus mostly on the ones in the throw game. But the missed explosives in the run game, I think, would alter our perception of where the running game is. If they hit just one of those big run plays, and we kind of...
Wait, what? I mean... Where would those come from?
So the one where you had Christian Turner one-on-one with the safety.
Okay.
On the fumble. The one where you had on the speed option.
Charbonnet,
where Geno Stone comes from depth.
So we got
that
two of the
been,
whole
That
game.
Could have been an explosive... And who knows how far on the play that you just talked about with Tariq Black and that block, who knows how far that, because he would have had a convoy around
I mean, there was a linebacker
point.
Coming out. He gets the first down, I think. I don't know if he, like, breaks it. So I don't necessarily agree that Michigan's ground game is close to breaking a lot of big runs.
I agree with Brian.
Look, if you design run plays to put your running back, he's going to have a guy. Can you get him one-on-one with a defensive back? Ideally, it would be a corner. But, hey, you put a one-on-one with the safety, win that sometime. And, man, right now, defensive backs are winning those battles.
I agree with that. But, I mean,
I can't.
And that's not saying that the blocking is always pristine. It's not. I'm just saying there have been plays the run game left on the field.
Yeah, but when you say, like, 2 in a game, that's not enough. Like, there needs to be 6-8 of those. And Michigan needs to make guys wrong with their play calls and with the structure of their offense. And so the arc stuff helps make people wrong. As the ISO stuff at the beginning of the game where they're inserting the tight end at the back end of the line, if you look at the second Michigan's second set from scrimmage, Iowa's linebacker goes the wrong way. And this used to happen a lot under Jim Harbaugh, because he comes in, he's got the man ball offense, he's got traps, he's got all kinds of stuff. You see a lot of guys go the wrong way. Michigan is screwing with safeties. And I don't think that this run game is currently constructed as screwing with anybody. Like, you get a little bit here and there, as I mentioned at the beginning of the game, but to me, you know, you get these 4 or 5 yard runs, and I'm like, oh, that's what they were going to get on that.
You know, I my big picture thinking is that there's a lot of ways to be a bad offense, and then when you start picking this out or picking that out, it still all of a sudden doesn't become a good offense. I mean, some of it's mystifying. There's a play where Patterson is rolling out, and they've got a high receiver and a low receiver. The high receiver is in the linebacker, I think, or the corner is sinking back towards him, and the low receiver's uncovered, and he throws an interception to the
yeah.
high.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's hard to see that as a, you know,
that's
mystifying.
That was on Shea.
It's on Shea, but then on some other play, it's somebody else.
Well, so you say, you know, the failed plays, and there's a failed play that's a 4-yard run that could have been a little bit more, and then there's a failed play that's an interception. There's a failed play that should be a big chunk play on a post route where, you know, People Jones is on one-on-one coverage, and it turns into a sack. There's a failed play where, you know, Patterson has a clean pocket, runs into another sack. The sheer damage level that the quarterback can do
is
a lot higher. And, you know, with Shea not participating in a lot of these plays because they're run plays, you know, when you say he's got 10 failed plays over the course of the game, yeah, that's half the time that he had a real drop back. So that's a rate where you can't sustain, just in terms of errors. And so if someone else comes up and has an issue, that's going to happen. And then your quarterback hopefully is able to bail you out of some of those issues instead of compounding them.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I guess to me the litany of plays where he wasn't on the responsible end of the stick, you know, do you have someone that masks those, that can fix those? Do they fix those other errors, or do you run the risk of compounding them?
I mean, at this point, Shea hasn't improved in a year and a half.
No, he's gotten worse. I mean, he wasn't this bad last year.
No, and I'm ready to see what McCaffrey can do when he's healthy.
I think if McCaffrey's healthy, you have to at least give him a drive, a game, to see what he can do with the run game, at the very least, right? At least a little bit of a curveball.
Well, I already think that they had already committed to.
I mean, they talked a big game about playing him.
They committed to having him involved in the game, but I just don't think they've gotten to the point where.
I mean, the kind of story of the offense over the Harbaugh era is like they talk a big game about something, and then it doesn't happen. You don't even see the whisper of it happening. So you get a little bit of playing time for
last
McCaffrey.
Year it was RPOs, right? This year it's speed and space.
Yeah. So they just say they spent all offseason talking about this thing that they're going to do, and then they can't do it at all. So like, how many screens has Michigan had that are successful
this year?
Many. Well, they tried them.
Maybe two.
Zero.
They've tried them.
Zero successful screens.
I mean, they got 7 yards on third and forever with Charbonnet, but that's not a successful screen. Yeah. That's just a give up and punt.
And yeah, they tried screens. But.
So, I mean, they did have a flare screen to Bell that was pretty good. I think that was in the opener. Yeah. And one bubble screen that went for 20 yards against Rutgers because the safety played it terribly.
Well, Brian, let me ask you this. I mean,
we got to get to a break. So, you know, I guess in closing, looking around the Big Ten, I think we're going to find out if Penn State's for real. This week,
yep.
When they go to Kinnick and take on the Hawkeyes, how do you guys see that game?
Penn State. I think Penn State's playing better than Iowa right now. Even at Kinnick, I think Penn State will control that game.
Yes, has Penn State really been tested? I mean, unless you count Pitt as a test.
Well, they had trouble at Pitt. They only won, I think, by a touchdown.
Seven, yeah. And, of course.
I mean, Penn State's look a lot better than I thought they would this year. So, yes, I mean, Iowa's going to be their most difficult test so far, but, I mean, probably be a close game, but they probably win.
Who is they?
Penn State.
Penn State, gotcha. Yeah, we'll find out about them. How do you see Michigan State, Wisconsin?
I mean,
is Michigan State going to get double-digit points in this game? No.
They got double-digit points against Ohio State.
Jim Leonard.
Jim Leonard's good.
Next Michigan coach, Jim Leonard.
I see Michigan State winning that game and a remarkable upset.
You think?
I think Michigan State will win that game. I think they'll figure out a way to shut down the Wisconsin running game, and I don't think Cohen is good enough to carry that team.
I agree with the last point. I don't think Cohen's good enough.
Yeah, so I think Michigan State has a legit shot at winning that game, and I would sort of lean to them slightly.
Gotcha. All right, we'll find out a lot more.
Incidentally, we'll probably get John O'Neill this week, right? I saw him last year. Wow. I saw him last year.
Well, at least it's this game.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping.
Is Peters going to play?
No.
He's out?
They're starting the Robinson kid. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Oh, so they've already announced that he's out.
Peters is out. Yeah, I saw O'Neill do the Northwestern. I didn't know he was doing it, the Northwestern Nebraska game.
And then you looked at the score.
I looked at five straight butchered calls, and I said, "Who's repping this game?" And I looked, and I said, "Oh, okay."
At least it'll be this one.
Yeah, I'm hoping. We haven't seen him yet, so we're probably due.
All right, so yeah, we won't spend very much time recapping this game. I can see it'll be all looking ahead to what that Penn State game on the road will look like. So that'll be next week's MGO Blog Roundtable. As always, guys, appreciate you dropping by.
Who's got it better than us?
No!